Frank Prattle. This is the best show in the world. This is Frank Prattle.
My name is Zephyr Thrall. You're listening to Frank Prattle, either at artonair.org or possibly at frankprattle.com. Today, we are inside the belly of the beast here at Leo Koenig Gallery, or Leo Koenig Incorporated, I think.
Leo Koenig Incorporated, Leo Koenig Gallery, whatever you want to call it.
We'll call it whatever we want today. And it's a special day. It's Greg Bogan's opening, and Greg is with us as well. And it's about 2 hours till touchdown, I think.
Yeah.
And are you nervous?
Numb.
Numb. Good. Mild panic in the back of the mind.
You know, I think I'm keeping it at bay, but sure.
For those of you listening, you know, he looks cool as hell, so those points are in his favor.
That's the hangover.
That's the hangover from yesterday. You'd be surprised. We've been doing this for about 10 years now, and Greg probably even a little bit longer. But yeah,
there's still...
Maybe a year longer, but there's still the kind of the moment just before an opening where you just get incredibly nervous, and there's no reason to be nervous, you know. Yeah. It's just, because, you know, mostly it's just young people going to come, friends, artists. I don't think we're going to have any kind of stretch limos roll up tonight.
Although we don't know.
Let's see. But these days, this becomes more of a friendly gathering, and it's very active and very alive and wonderful. But certainly no reason to be nervous besides being judged.
Right, besides standing, you know, naked in front of everybody, you know.
With everybody pointing.
That's the part.
How much do you want for that?
Right, exactly. It's like that recurring high school dream where you're like in the hallway with your underwear on and no one's like, you're hoping no one notices.
So tell us a little bit, maybe we'll start with you, Leo, and tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do.
Okay, well, my name is Leo Koenig. As you mentioned, I run an art gallery here in Manhattan. I've just had my 10th anniversary on April 10th. We started in 1999 in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, in a very small, modest little garage, and sort of fought our way up into the echelon of the contemporary art world here. I really am a classic gallerist in the sense that I represent a group of artists. I think in the moment it's about 14 or 15 artists that I sort of more or less exclusively represent. I put on their shows. I represent their work. I keep archives of their work. I basically kind of take care of whatever needs to be taken care of, and I also supply other galleries with works and shows and so forth. So I'm a classic gallerist in the sense of how this job has existed for the past, I don't know how many hundreds of years.
Okay. And yourself, Greg, tell us a little bit about you.
Well, my name is Greg Bogan, and I am a New York painter. I was actually born in Queens, but grew up in the city. And I don't know. That's what I do. I make paintings. That's my main occupation.
That's what we're about to get into.
That's right.
So, taking a walk through the show and looking at the paintings that you have hanging for this most recent one, one of the things that I was particularly struck with is kind of the perfection of line. Mm-hmm. There's definitely like a smooth, crisp, flawless geometric element to the show. Mm-hmm. What? Tell me what your fascination is with that.
I think that it's probably creating safety and, you know, the need to control my surroundings. It's probably, I'd say it's a control issue, you know, kind of frame the chaos.
Yeah. How often do people tell you that they look kind of like word bubbles?
Well, this group of painting has the inescapable connection, I suppose, but it wasn't intentional, but I have heard it at least 5 times now.
Yeah.
And I mean, and a lot of people have not seen these paintings. I mean, I really kept my studio completely closed off just so I didn't open myself to outside opinion, which might make me doubt my next step.
Leo, what about yourself? This kind of idea of perfection in
Flow? Yeah, I mean, knowing Greg, I see exactly what it is. It's an attempt to sort of control the world, in or his own world, or somehow kind of give an order to it in this chaos. And we kind of, a poignant element in that is that the regular format of a press release, which we have in this kind of, this time we opted, or Greg asked me to replace a regular press release in which we usually boast of the artist's successes and try to entice the press to come and discuss this show, we replace it with a statement that Greg made, and a statement that very clearly just basically outlines the intent of these works without trying to tell anybody what to look at, but to just come and look and judge for yourself and to kind of, you know, remove the statement, so to say, right?
Yeah, you know, remove the normally descriptive nature of a press release, where I guess you
reference artists,
explain to people what they're going to come and see. They might as well, I mean, in my opinion, that's probably better for them to just come and see it. So,
well, many, you know, on the flip side of that, many people worry that if they don't, you know, kind of
sure,
put out that broadcast, that,
right,
you know, the bullhorn of, you
right,
know, how fabulous,
yeah,
this is, then nobody will come at all.
Right.
Are you worried about that?
No,
I mean, think we got a track record. I think we're gonna, you know.
I mean, I've had a couple openings in Europe where there have been like major soccer games that evening, and no one showed up. So, so at this point, I'm pretty much, you know, used to it. I'm trying to stay neutral with.
Yeah, I do remember our opening in Italy last. I don't know, was it 4 months ago or something like that? And I think it was between me, Greg, Greg's wife, and probably an assistant of mine, or I forgot, yeah, what it was. We were pretty much on our own for like the first hour and a half of this opening before,
uh-huh,
you know, maybe 20 people showed up that were,
yeah,
invited to dinner.
Right, exactly.
Like, it's dinner time, yeah.
Whereas,
yeah,
here in New York, obviously it's much more active.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure we're gonna have 200-300 people,
yeah,
here.
Besides this gallery, I mean, we sort of have a kind of happy clan mentality here, so it's a given that a certain group of, you know, of us will show up.
Die hard.
Each other,
so. Right. So let's talk a little bit about that. There is definitely kind of a mystique of the Koenig crew.
Uh-huh,
that,
uh-huh,
that rebel rousers, troublemakers, and bar brawlers,
as I've
heard you described.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Not, you know, necessarily my own judgment here, you know, because I know that you're all good tax-paying early waking citizens.
Tell us
yeah, a little bit about the crew.
I think that
they're not the kind of people that go to tea parties.
sorry, we're just opening a pack of cigarettes here in case you're all listening to some crumbling noises. Look, this is there's obviously, you know, you have to imagine. I started this when I was 19 years old. I don't know, can I swear on the radio?
Absolutely, go for it.
I didn't have a fucking clue what I was doing. and it was really learning by doing, and that meant making a lot of mistakes. So, I'm sorry, I need a cigarette when I'm talking about this. Basically, the attitude that was kind of almost artificially created, because we just kind of felt like, well, here we are doing it. We're exposing ourselves. We're sort of creating a whole new scenario for this sort of so-called clan. This was a group of friends that became very close in a way out of sort of insecurity. We basically kind of formed a little group in order to kind of secure ourselves and be a bit stronger in numbers. And so what happened, I guess, was that there was a very instant and immediate success. Measure it however you want. I mean, but there was a success. There was a response. And things somehow happened to be noticed and acknowledged, and maybe with that came a sort of a naive boasting, and then the kind of feeling of, and this is now from my personal experience of what I think, the way I kind of saw myself or see myself now, having had a number of years of solid, very neutral way of looking back at my own history. Kind of getting high on oneself, and somehow feeling that people were kind of wanting to see, like, oh, they need to act up again, because that's what they do, come on, where's the show? And
And
certainly didn't want to disappoint anybody. So it kind of, I think this sort of mystique there.
And that is the American mystique anyway.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Pollock getting drunk, pissing in fireplace or...
Right. Right, and it kind of we became sort of our little card, so to say. And you know what? It's been I think we've gotten rid of that stigma over the past years. It was not an easy thing to sort of try to prove to people that there was more to this than a bunch of tough guys that can you know
and gals.
And gals that come in there. Thank you.
I mean, the proof is in the pudding, you know? Like, mm-hmm. If you have good shows, then people show up, people buy them, you get press.
Exactly.
More people show
exactly.
up.
And with a track record, you know, like, I must say that is something that I, without any nostalgia and really quite a bit of, I feel very good when I look at the, you know, what we've done in the past 10 years and how consistently we've worked. And, you know, most of the artists that we show have shown with this gallery for a long time. I mean, we did the very first show in Manhattan, which was, I believe, in March of 2000. Was Greg Bogan, and that was really, this was him kind of walking on a limb by betting on a 21, 22, whatever, however old I was at the time. This young kid from Germany who kind of, you know, whatever, go through the wall type mentality, and at the same time, I was really forming a program, and so we sort of, you know, connected. And
were you nervous about it?
Yeah, I mean, I was more nervous to have a show in New York than to show with Leo. Really, I mean, I'd had several shows in Europe prior, but also any fear I had was alleviated by this air of possibility.
It's a nice thing to say, yeah. Year of possibility.
And that's, I think, still, you know, permeates this gallery, you know?
Yeah.
Question for you. You guys moved from, you know, Williamsburg up through, you know, lower Manhattan up to Chelsea. And many people, you know, across the board have varying views of Chelsea. Some mm-hmm. it's seen as the center of the art world, you know, some it's seen as the center of what's wrong with the art world. You know, some it's seen as just a place where hobos used to sleep, you know what I mean? But as far as we're concerned, how much of Chelsea do you think is the emperor's new clothes?
Well, I think that the art world has always kind of, or the New York gallery scene, I should say, which has always had its centers. You know, it used to be Soho, now it's Chelsea. Before that, there was a small time, before that was 57th Street, there was a period when the East Village was very hot and big. That's coming back. So the art world, the galleries kind of stuck together. They sort of bunch up. I mean, the fact that there's something like 600 galleries in Chelsea now is obviously a proof to the fact that it got blown out of proportion. That this became a huge an animal that obviously it's too big for its own good. I think that we are now in a time when all this is kind of correcting itself. I mean, I see a lot of for rent signs everywhere, walking around the streets of Chelsea.
Closed galleries on 23rd Street.
Closed galleries on 23rd Street. And I think that that's not necessary. I think this is a very natural thing that happens. Again, I think, you know, for whatever motivation that people had to sort of start galleries and whatever, I think there was a kind of a lure of a quick buck to be made, which is absolutely, you know, makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, especially, at least when I entered art school, you definitely couldn't expect to make money, let alone show, so.
Yeah, and I think that we're sort of getting back to that a little bit, to this time. I think that it's very, for me, it's a very healthy thing that's happening right now. And I really...
Healthy until it happens to you.
Healthy until it happens to me. But you know what? I'm very much prepared for this in a sense that I'm as boastful as we might sound sometimes, I'm actually quite a humble person. And I've kept things pretty level, and we've never been kind of crazy in terms of pricing or anything like that. Okay, so we basically even though the image of sort of being this boastful gallery and you know the successes and this and that, we are I'm actually quite a humble person, and we kept things very very level and very very calm, and the pricing structure that we've had has not changed drastically. I mean.
You haven't been doubling, tripling.
We have not doubling and tripling exactly, and it's and we all live humble lives. We all live in our little one bedroom apartments strewn around the outskirts of Manhattan or in Brooklyn or whatever. And the kind of idea of these are the high flying private jetting dudes, you know, kind of sucking up to the big millionaires and billionaires. It's just not quite what we do. It's actually so. I really encourage people to think two or three times whether they really want to open an art gallery or whether they want to become an artist. And so all for the right motivations, you know.
So one of the things that that I was also interested in is kind of the varying changes that have gone on since you met each other, because you've been working together for a long time. You know, as you said, you were 22 when you started working, and I don't know how old you were, but, you know, 10 years younger than now.
Right, so 32.
And tell me, like, you know, from your initial reaction to each other and kind of what you liked and disliked about each other to what's happened now. Give me a growth outlook.
My initial reaction, I met Leo at an opening when he was in Williamsburg. I was introduced by a friend of mine who also shows in this gallery, Bill Saylor. And I liked him right away. I mean, he was just very down to earth, approachable, you know, enthusiastic, and willing to do anything. Whether it was, you know, hang the show, sell the work, paint the walls if we needed to.
Yeah, it was a very kind of an immediate feeling of trust, and that's something that's very important. That you can trust each other. You know, you have to imagine this is a completely unregulated business. You know, there is no when somebody says to me, "I want to buy," I kind of send off a laissez-faire invoice, and somehow, you know, like it's just not. There's no nothing to kind of control. We make the prices. Everything is sort of like this is a very intuitive thing that we do. It's very carefully balanced. This is not, you know, it's not fly by night. We don't just kind of shoot in the dark. It's very, there's a lot of thought that goes into it. And this is something that builds over time. I do remember, I mean, Greg and I, we it became very successful very quickly. And hand in hand, of course, came the lures of the greater art world and what's out there. And I think I became a little bit sort of defensive in my ideas, and I kind of caged myself in a little bit. And there was a scenario between Greg and I, for instance, where he was offered an exhibition from another gallery, by another gallery, by a very large gallery, Mary Boone Gallery, where he subsequently did have a show in 2003. And I remember the moment when Greg came into the gallery and said, like, you know, I had this offer, and I enjoy working with you tremendously, but I'm wondering if you understand what that means. And I remember saying, like, this is probably as good of an offer as it's ever going to come, and I think that you need to pursue that. I was maybe not quite as neutral.
Like,
in
no, you were pretty, what the fuck?
No, I mean, with each other, we were pretty neutral.
Yeah. I think I wasn't quite agreeing on the place, but it, nevertheless, it was a very kind of clear scenario that this
was
an opportunity.
York, no?
It was in New York, yeah. And so that, of course, meant that Greg would sort of not be represented by my gallery anymore. And you know, and these things are as difficult as it is sometimes to kind of to sort of not be proud or not have that pride interfere. In this case, it really showed that trust of me, and I remember this. We were talking and saying, like, well, if this doesn't work out, then I hope that we're going to reconnect. And interestingly enough, a number of years later, we reconnected. And it wasn't like, it was not, there was no time passed. It was immediate and an absolute comfort. There was no weird sort of, oh, well, there you go, or kind of rubbing it in, or saying, like, well, you know, like, this is going to be a little bit, or, you know, just there was right. no strange right. feeling. It was just right back where it should be. And that is really a proof to what I mean when I talk about this trust, that you really, there's a connection, and this connection is very, very important.
Now, I've heard many, many gallerists talk about kind of a flip. Definitely trust is important. I mean, that's, you know, primary. But many, you seem to have a different tact than many gallerists mm-hmm. that I've seen. Mm-hmm. Many gallerists that I've talked to think along the lines of this is a business relationship, mm-hmm. primarily a business relationship. Mm-hmm. And, I, you know, let's say I love your art, you know, and mm-hmm. I like working with you, but it's really we're business partners in this, and let's not become too friendly. And you definitely are on the other end of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you said, like having a crew, you're friends with them, you guys go out together.
Yeah.
I mean, that can get sticky, no?
It can get sticky, but it's also what runs my engine. It's where I feed, what I feed from. But, you know, I have no creativity per se. I'm not an artist. I'm really the person that kind of formulates it. I'm the person that kind of builds a structure around what people, the artists like Greg do.
Right.
They are the creative element, and I feed off of that creativity. I show it, I kind of contextualize it, I try to present it, I try to kind of make the best of all worlds kind of come together and have, you know, offer the artist whatever I can. But for me, in what my intents are with the gallery and what I want to, it's not just to kind of run a show after a show after a show and somehow pay the bills and have my rent paid. But there's more to be gotten. There's more to be had. And these are the moments when we sit together, we talk about art, and we, you know, and we do this quite frequently. This is what feeds me. This is when I come alive. And this is what motivates me to do what I do.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that it's a really healthy partnership, and, you know, it is a partnership. The artist and the gallery, they work together, and when I left the gallery, I pretty much immediately missed that connection. And I went to a very business-oriented gallery.
And Mary Moon, right. For those listening, right. Puts, you know, it's huge galleries since the early 80s, puts the price on the list, the show list out front, and is business, known exactly. as the businesswoman.
But, I mean, she's a great lady, you know, great New York character, but, and for a lot of people, that is a great relationship. With my upbringing, I missed what I had here right away, and I was really fortunate that, you know, Leo and I did have a bond, and when we saw each other again, it was right back to where we were. So I couldn't be happier. I mean, I think that the collaboration between us is healthy and productive. So.
And then it's a test of a true friendship to be able to do business together. I mean, that is not an easy thing, and I think there's a very healthy mixture of business and friendship that we know when we do business, and we know when we're doing things outside of the gallery.
Yeah.
Let's say, you know, we're both kind of bicycle enthusiasts when we go on bike rides together.
Right, when we're not smoking cigarettes.
Speaking of which, both cyclists, and you, Leo,
yes,
more than a cyclist.
Yeah, Leo's the
triathlete.
Freak of the group.
The freak of the group, yeah. I need to do that. I need to always put things onto the next level. It was that was one of the therapeutic elements of kind of like basically leaving a certain life behind that you mentioned earlier, and kind of the, you know, sometimes when people call it the brawling age, but it's more like kind of, you know, the heavy drinking and the heavy kind of socializing, and somehow socializing in the art is often connected to drinking. So there was somehow a moment in time, just about 2 or 3 years ago, when I decided, well, I'm going to have to leave that behind, and I'm going to grow old a little bit, a bit more discreetly. And so somehow in search of a similarly dedicated, kind of compassionate hobby, if you may, somehow triathlon came into my life. And, and I've been very, very dedicated to that.
Damn, how many have you done? I mean, triathlon's a big fucking deal.
It's a big deal. This year is going to be my real breakout year. I've done 3 so far, but I've done, this year I'm upping to the half Ironman distance. So this is going to be, by the end of the season, I'm doing 1 half Ironman, which is quite an ordeal, and I'm training up for it, and it's feeling good.
I'll be damned. Remind me to talk to you afterwards. There's
sure.
something that you might be interested in.
Very good.
Anyway, onward we go. So you guys were talking about the future and things to come. And Leo, we had talked a little bit earlier that, you know, in this time of kind of shrinking, in this time of, you know, kind of pandemonium fear, you know, Wall Street is flipping their lid right now. You know, daily in the papers you read about you know, panic. And not just, you know, artists panic, which is, you know, fairly common stuff, mm-hmm. but, you know, like the most stable institutions supposedly in the world are panicking. Tell me about what you got coming up.
Well, I mean, we're in the process of sort of, I've obviously really occupied my mind with how I should be treating the scenario. I mean, on the one hand, I am fortunate enough to do a lot of business with Europe. Which somehow is less affected by this immediate panic which is existing here in America. So I guess the Americans are a bit more pragmatic.
I think that art is a lot more entrenched in European culture, so it might be less, the buying of art might be less involved with trophy hunting in Europe than it is here, so it might also be less affected because of that.
Yeah, and so in my thinking, I said, like, well, I think what we need to do is we need to sort of change the look a little bit. Somehow it felt like I felt a little sort of stuck, and it really started with a very naive or very kind of direct approach by saying, like, well, let's change the gallery. We're going to change the layout of the gallery. And I made a few changes in a matter of a week. I remember actually Greg coming in about 2 weeks ago, and yeah. I told him, well, your show is going to look different because we're going to break through this wall, we're going to close this. And Greg was like, yeah, this is really great, Leo, and your enthusiasm is fantastic, but forget about it.
Right. Can we get this done before the opening? I, you know, sort of painted the show with the old space in mind.
And I said, like, don't worry about it. And I must say, I mean, we worked for 4 days straight. I don't think I got much sleep in. I did it myself with my two art handlers. And we just basically kind of got our construction clothes back on, and which I hadn't done in about,
yeah,
Jesus, like 7 years or 8 years. I, you know, used to do this a lot.
That's
building all these galleries, but
you were conjuring Colin Deland.
But I was finding myself sort of demolishing certain elements in the gallery, and it really changed dramatically. And I had some collectors in yesterday who just were stunned, who walked in and said, like, this is incredible. This changes everything. It changes the attitude. And it's really minor things, but if somebody who came here and seen the gallery before and comes in now, it really makes a drastic difference. And in this sort of development, or in this kind of mindset that I was in, a gallery next to mine closed shop. She couldn't keep the doors open anymore. And I pretty much immediately kind of reached out to the landlords and said, you know, why don't I just take this over? And I'm just going to make sure that, you know, that you don't have a lost month, and we're going to negotiate. This is the time to negotiate, obviously. There's a certain nervous feeling, obviously, in doing that, just because I'm kind of obviously taking on another 1,000 square feet and responsibility
and it's expensive
monthly payments.
Yeah.
And I, funny enough, yesterday, this very same collector brought me this article that I just want to, like, you know, quote real quick from the New Yorker called Hanging Tough, that James Sorovieki, I guess, wrote. And it talks about Kellogg, the Kellogg's company, and how it basically back in the 20s, during the Great Depression, expanded in a huge way, doubled their ad budget, and really and just went all out and really became what they are. So this article was sort of talking about how with a certain attitude of basically not like feeling like, oh my God, is this ship sinking, but more like the attitude of, am I missing the ship?
Or let's build a bigger ship.
And I felt very much kind of sort of, it hit the nail on the head in the sense that everybody's kind of panicky. Everybody's sort of retreating and not quite coming up with a plan. And I think this is the time when you really sort of sit down. You don't lock yourself in. You actually now, I see this as an opportunity to really redefine myself, redefine the program, but also kind of maybe set a couple of paths that I kind of felt like, you know, again, as we were talking, by me sort of learning by doing, there was a lot of paths that I took that were the wrong way to go, and I made a lot of mistakes, and I learned from those. And I think that this is one of those times when I feel very, very certain that I'm making the right decision in expanding, and in expanding in a smart way. So I'm taking on the space next door, and I'm going to give young artists the chance to show there for the first time in their career. So I'm going to try to get back to a role that I played about 10 years ago, giving the artists that I show a platform back then. And now, obviously, I have the responsibility of representing these people, and this is a very different animal, and the gallery as it is here will exist like that. But I am now, I feel the need, this is a good time to kind of reach out and bring a younger audience in, and bring a younger group of artists in, not to represent, but to give them shows. So I'm going to run this space next door as a project space. And I'm going to be very actively playing a role in choosing what I'd like to show there. And I'm going to be very open-minded about it. And I'm very much looking forward to it. And it's really reinvigorating my passion for this. And as just to kind of go back to this article, I just said, they're talking about the opportunity the last sentence says here, today most companies are far more worried about sinking the boat than about missing it. That's why the opportunity to do what Kellogg did exists. And also that is why it's so nerve-wracking to try it. So it's a very nerve-wracking scenario, because you really are looking at the bills that are flying in every month. But at the same time, I'm fortunate enough to still do enough business and to have collectors that are supporting me in a very active way that I think this is a good thing to risk.
That's fantastic. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. It's definitely that kind of entrepreneurial spirit that has built New York as an art, center.
Yeah.
What do you think about it, Greg?
I agree completely. I mean, I think it sends, I think there's a risk, but that, I mean, I don't think this is the motivation for doing it, but I think it sends a really healthy signal that while, things might look bad, there's actually a good future ahead, and I think it's better to, try and move ahead than tread water.
Yeah. Or retreat. For that
or retreat.
Yeah.
But, of course, the natural inclination is to retreat,
yeah.
And when you see everyone around you getting nervous, it's very hard to fight that. And even as an artist, I frequently feel like, whoa, this is, will I be able, or will we all be able to continue doing what we're doing? And is there a place for us to keep doing it in? So I think it's very healthy.
So a couple questions. One, when is it open?
Well, I haven't signed the lease yet. When is this airing? Nobody else take this space. I believe if things go to my plan, I would like to open this in May.
All right. So quick.
Quick. Yeah. I think it's just time to. There's no fucking around. Let's just kind of do it. I get very stubborn, and I just literally, you would see me in there building for the next week, and if I have to, I'll do it myself. It's just one of those things that when I put it in my head, I will get it done, and so I'm actually like, I sort of hype myself up in a sense, but I already got the keys.
Fantastic.
I already figured that out, so I hope this doesn't air up till like a week and a half or 2 weeks from now. So
I think we're safe.
Good.
the other thing I was going to say is that, I've heard rumor, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm wrong
rumors
all the time,
yeah.
So is that when you initially started this gallery, that you wanted to get away from painting? Your idea was that painting was something that you weren't necessarily interested in at the time. And over the process of years and years, it seems that you've definitely changed your opinion on that, because you carry many painters now.
That's correct.
And pretty much your entire fleet, not entire fleet, but majority, I would say, is painters.
Yeah, there's a lot of painters, yeah. There's if you actually then kind of really take a close look, it's almost like as many sculptors or people that at least kind of delve in the medium of sculpture. Nevertheless, you're right. I think when I made the statement of not wanting to show painting, it was an attempt for me to formulate what I want to do without knowing what I was going to do. Again, this is a statement that I made when I was 19 years old, living or existing out of a little garage with a dirt floor and asbestos ceiling, and it was just kind of and barely any walls.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The necessity of showing work that was not a traditional painting or two-dimensional work was just kind of given by the surroundings I was in. I think that, again, I just sort of, when it's interesting, like oftentimes, dealers or galleries are being called taste makers. Well, I was forming my own taste. I was just figuring out. I was a chef who basically had an array of ingredients, and I just kind of had to figure it out on my own as to what was up to my palate, so to say. And so it took a number of years to really formulate my own sort of what I thought as the wise thing to do, or the right thing to do, and what engage me. I mean, obviously I have to keep myself interested, I have to keep myself curious and engaged in order to translate this to the rest of the world.
Right.
And so I think that, yeah, I mean, that there is, the statement is actually correct. It's not a rumor. I did say this at one point. I was very, very dogmatic, but without really having a basis of a...
You were young.
Yeah, right? I was young. Felt good.
So in response, though, this project space that's going to be opening up, are you going to focus on other things outside painting? Then, or are you
going to? Yeah, I'm not going to get myself nailed down into any medium. I never really did. It just happens to become, you know, what it is. I mean, obviously, this is something that I now can reflect on, having done 80, 90 shows in the past 10 years, that I can now see, oh yeah, obviously there's a certain tendency here. In this case, I think I'll be really open-minded. I'm very curious to see a lot of things, and I'm giving a lot of my staff the opportunity to bring people to me or suggest artists, and I do the same thing with the artists. As a matter of fact, I think one of the most active element of you know, something where I'm going to be, you know, certain things are going to be, you know, brought to me and give, you know, brought to my attention, I should say, is going to happen by artists that I represent in this gallery. I think that they're going to be the ones who say, like, I think you should look at this. And it's already starting to happen in a matter of a week and a half of us talking about this. As I said, I make kind of decisions rather quickly. we already have a number of people that I'm very curious and interested to see their work.
And what, let's go in that direction. Who is firing you guys up? Who are you inspired by right now? Like, is Greg, when you were making this most recent show, who have you been looking at or listening to, or, you know, what have you?
Honestly, I haven't been looking very much. I guess that I've been working long enough now that I sort of feel like I'm my own voice and I don't really go out and hunt for it. Maybe that, I mean, I don't think that creates tunnel vision. I'm certainly aware of what's going on, but I mean, there's artists I like, but there's not necessarily artists that I'm taking cues from.
Mm-hmm. Who do you like?
Well, when Leo and I first started working together, I was sort of coming out of a obsession with Blinky Palermo. You know, I've always liked Barnett Newman, but I've always liked these artists because of their sort of radical intent, not necessarily their desire to be imitated.
Okay, good. Leo, what about yourself?
You know what? I mean, as of late, I must say, I have to kind of...
You can't name any of your own artists.
No. I don't. I per se am going to actually name some of my colleagues that inspire me. And again, I'm reversing sort of a statement that I would have made earlier. And I must say, I'm very much inspired by what Larry Gagosian is doing right now. I'm incredibly engaged in the shows that he's been putting up. I don't know whether it's a coincidence to kind of have these timed in such a kind of interesting way, where this Manzoni retrospective, Piero Manzoni retrospective that happened last month, it just blew my mind how a commercial gallery was able to kind of put together such a comprehensive retrospective show of one of my favorite artists, Piero Manzoni. And
Gagosian seems to be going in this like a museum direction.
Yeah, and like, I was going to say the last thing that I just saw is like this Picasso show. I walked in there with an artist from the gallery, Idis Breakers, and just started giggling like a bunch of girls. It was like
I had the same reaction.
It was insane. Oh, there's 100 paintings, late paintings. I never saw such a comprehensive show in any museum of such a detailed sort of area or timeline in Picasso. It was incredible, and there was great works, there was the bad works, there was everything was together, but it was a beautiful hanging. It was incredibly well researched. It was stunning to see what a commercial gallery can pull off. And you know, when we talked about the sort of the new world that's now the old world again, of this blatant commercialism, you know, obviously Gagosian kind of was one of the lead sort of actors in that play, and he is one of the most successful dealers there is, and I must say I haven't been so inspired by any shows as I have been inspired by his shows as of late, and my hat goes off to him. So that's something that I'm really inspired by. I also I'm also quite taken by the sort of consistency of some of the younger galleries that I don't want to say we have started with, but that have come along sort of, you know, at the same time, or there's a gallery that I really quite admire and I think is absolutely wonderful, and I think the only person who really did the right choice of staying in Williamsburg, and that's Pierogi. I think that he's a very, very interesting person. I think he does a fantastic program, and I think he really sticks true to his guns, and I think that's absolutely wonderful. A lot of his colleagues from Williamsburg, I was never a Williamsburg gallery when I did my year there, so to say. I never quite identified with that scene, or I kind of did blue chip and more established artists, and I was kind of the odd one out. So I think it was always inevitable that I was going to kind of be trying to find a space in Manhattan, and I was just kind of sort of trying to get the funds together. But there was a number of other galleries that started there, and that are kind of unfortunately not with us anymore. They're not in existence anymore. And so I think that they might make the mistakes of kind of leaving, being the big fish in the small pond, kind of being the small fish in the big pond, and not actually being able to survive that. And so. So my again, he's somebody who I'm inspired by, and I think that there's a number of galleries that younger galleries that really are defining themselves in an interesting way. Canada Gallery, I think, is very interesting. I think they're doing a very interesting program. They're very kind of, again, they're their own kind of voice and funny, interesting people.
On the flip side, though, I mean, with the good always comes the bad, mm-hmm. And on the flip side of that, you know, Greg, who would you say is fucking up right now? Who is slipping? Who do you dislike?
Who do I dislike?
Yeah, painters that you've always hated, things that you can't stand.
I've never liked Marc Chagall. I mean, painters. I don't really want to get caught up in who I dislike. You know, as a whole, on the art world, I think that there was a unfortunate profusion of too much money that, you know, created a lot of work that isn't very good, but that's probably always the case. I think when times are tough, you have to be more creative, and that leads to some healthy solutions. So I think it's probably more important to just keep doing what you're doing because you have to, and not really assume that you're going to be rewarded for your effort.
Okay.
Again, I'm going to...
Not that I want to be poor, but, you know, I mean...
But poor is better than dead, I hear.
Right. Poor is better than dead, or poor is better than, you know, having too much and being... You know,
a
too
dick.
Lazy to push yourself to, you know, challenge yourself.
Yeah.
So,
I think one thing that I've profoundly dislike is the tendency over the past 10 years to the sort of importance that is being laid on to art fairs. I'm a big. I really am starting to feel.
Do you participate?
I participate, and I'm sort of, you know, I prospered through a lot of these art fairs, whether it was in Miami, the Miami Basel fair, or whether it was the Armory show, and interestingly enough, now that this kind of world is becoming much smaller and somehow much more intimate again, and these big sort of fairs, these big huge sort of clunks that somehow built up their tents for the matter of 3 days, is one of the most unecological ways of you know, existence. I mean, they literally put up a city for the duration of 4 days, and then that shit goes to trash. Nevertheless, not even thinking about that, but just to the idea of sitting in a little cardboard box booth, paying $40,000 for it for 4 or 5 days, and sort of waiting for people to kind of pass through the aisles of hundreds of galleries to hopefully kind of walk into your little booth and pointing at a painting and saying, like, I'd like to buy that, I like that, it's just, to me, it's not what this is. It's not how this business, it's not who I am. This is not how I want to make my money. It's just not interesting in any way. And of course, it was necessary in a sense that so much happened there. So many people took that as an opportunity to just see everything at once. But I'm quite happy with the tendency of gallery shows coming back. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so impressed with what Gagosian does, because it really gets people to come into the galleries again. And luckily, the warm season is coming, and so I know the weekends are going to be quite frequented. The galleries are going to be frequented on the weekends, and I love that. And I can't wait to sit up front and greet people and say hello and show them the show, give them a tour of the show, and that is what I live for, not sitting in a cardboard box. So that's a profound dislike that I have. I think other than that, again, sort of referring to my own cast of or my own group that I'm in, the art dealers, I think I have a hard time. This is something that I never did myself, and I have a very hard time with dealers that are kind of building programs poaching artists, by basically kind of, you know, digging another man's yard and trying to. And this is something that I
headhunting.
I'm dealing with. I had to deal with it, and I'm dealing with it more and more as things are becoming more successful. And it's something that I really, the more I think about it, the more I realize how just wrong that is. And so that's just a kind of a little inside thing, I'm sure, that some of the listeners will be like, oh yeah, I think I know what he's talking about. So that's. But again, yeah, these days we focus more on the things we like, don't we?
Because we are in the pro session, not the recession. Here.
That's correct. That's right. Correct.
And Liam Koenig Incorporated, Ground Zero.
That's right. That's right. An hour from kickoff.
Speaking of which, I'll let you guys go because I'm sure that you have many arrangements to be made.
Yeah, there's beers in the fridge and more cigarettes to be smoked.
My name is Zephyr Thrall. You're listening to Frank Prattle at artonair.org, Art International Radio. Maybe you're listening at frankprattle.com as well, who's to say, or possibly on the radio airwaves, you know. If you're interested in this show by Greg Bogan at Leo Koenig, you can go to leokoenig.com, and that's leokoenig.com. And if you're interested in other art things, then get your artists out there and go look at it. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tiny bubble.
Tiny bubble.
In the wine.
In the wine.
Make me happy.
Make me happy.
Make me feel fine.